7.
Is that excellent?
But he is unable to conform his conduct to the requirements. That is, he's unable to. He knows it's not good to pull the trigger.
But he can't.
But he can.
He can't stop himself.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Now, there's these people who are psychotic. And, they don't belong. They should be treated as criminals.
Okay.
They should be sentenced as criminals. Now, maybe they should be taken out of the environment in which you and I live, because we can't protect society. So they should be institutionalized, humanely, and maybe a mental institution.
Yeah.
But what do we do when we get them to the mental institution? We've got all kinds of psychotropic drugs, other medications and things that we can do. And maybe we can get the individual back to the point where he does appreciate it. In some of these cases, so we'll never get them back.
Yeah.
Okay. So those individuals, unfortunately, may have to be permanently. Okay? Lest they create the problem for you and I, and even themselves.
Right.
All right. But then there's others that can be medicated and can get back to reality and are able to conform their conduct to the requirements of law. Well, we get them back to the point where they can conform their conduct to the requirements of law, then what do we do with them? Do we say, well, you killed the fellow there, and they say, well, you know, I wasn't responsible for it.
Yeah.
It's not that the devil made me do it or anything like that, but that I wasn't responsible for it. So what are we going to do with these people? Those are the real serious ones.
Yeah.
Thank God there's not as many as there are people that are in the middle of this whole thing. First of all, you've got to understand that there are individuals that come into your courtroom and they have other mental problems, such as whether they're competent to go to trial.
Yeah.
Now, you may have somebody that does appreciate the distinction between right and wrong, and you may have an individual who is able to conform his conduct to the requirements of the law.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not criminally insane. Yet he's mentally ill. You know, there's all kinds of mental illnesses, as I said. First of all, he's not able to appreciate the nature of the offense with which he was charged.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And cooperate with his attorney in posturing his defense. So he doesn't get the idea of what the hell this whole proceeding is.
Mm-hmm.
So you say, well, I'm not sure whether this fellow has got it all together here, or his lawyer indicates that he hasn't, or even the prosecutor turns around and says, I think this fellow's in La La Land, Judge, mm-hmm. and I think we ought to have him examined. So I order an examination. And sure enough, the psychiatrist come back, and let's just say, not an unusual case, the psychiatrist on both sides, even the defense goes against a psychiatrist. Everybody agrees that this guy is not competent to stand trial. That is, he doesn't understand or appreciate the nature of the offense for which he is charged, or is unable to cooperate with his attorney in prep and posture in this case.
Yeah.
So you get that kind of guy. Now, he's in between, you know what I'm saying? He, at the same time, we aren't even getting to the point of whether or not he's got it. Insanity defense, that's something else.
Yeah.
So, this is where you can end up with the individual that you say, okay, doctor, maybe we'll send him back over and you guys work on him, medicate him in the meantime, and see how he looks to us in 90 days. He comes back in 90 days and he's kind of iffy. Give him another 90 days and see what he looks like, and then he comes back 6 months later, and here he is. And the doctors say, yep, now he understands what the program is, he understands what the charge is, and he's able to cooperate with Mr. Shaughnessy here, who's representing him, and he'll be doing just fine. Well, the point of the matter is that this guy is, he's okay. He's acting appropriately, but he's stoned. You know, and I see him over there, and looking at him, and he's staring off into space, you know. And now, this criminal justice system that I'm in says, this guy's already, he's ready for a trial. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got somebody out there that's under drugs. And I'm not only going to assure that this guy is really dead, ready and able to cooperate with his attorney.
Yeah.
You know, because he might be a little slow in the uptake. He may not, because of being under the influence of drugs, you know. You know, once you drive a car, this guy can't drive a car, maybe, because he's under the influence of drugs.
Yeah,
he can't go out there and operate a piece of machinery, because he's under the influence of drugs, but he's fit as a fiddle to go to trial.
To go to trial and defend
him. That part bothers me.
And yet, it's on you to eventually have to sentence.
Well, now do you get these other things, and I'm not sure what this Grimes or
Graves.
Graves case specifically involved. But I gather from the fact that it was a burglary or something indicated that it was a lesser felony. May not even have been a violent felony. But now the man's competent to stand trial. The evidence is maybe overwhelming against the guy. I look at a particular individual and say, my God, you know, I've got a situation where he's got prior felonies. That he's not, because this is a class, maybe one felony, and he's got these priors, he's not, he doesn't qualify under the law for probation.
Yeah.
The only thing I can do on the basis of the evidence before me, there's no question about it. He's competent to stand trial. He's not criminally insane. That established that he does know, and he did know at the time.
Yeah.
That's the difference between right and wrong. And I still am feeling that this guy is not as criminally culpable. We talk about criminal culpability. Is a lot of other individuals. You know, you get a guy that's got a little IQ, okay? And let's just say he's stacked up and hanging around with a guy with a much higher IQ. And the guy with the higher IQ is bent on criminal activity.
Yeah.
And he's a prime mover, so to speak, let's say. And the other guy's a follower. And I got the follower.
Yeah.
And I find that the follower is minimally qualified on the basis of his IQ. And he's minimally qualified on the basis of the medical evidence that's before me as to his competence. And I'm satisfied that he is competent. You know, some people are more competent than others.
Yeah.
And this continuum, he might be fitting in maybe a 1 or 2 on the scale of competency of 1 to 10. So, you know, what does the law allow me to do on this mandatory sentencing? This General Assembly has passed this law that individual with these prior criminal convictions must be sentenced to a period of incarceration by the Department of Corrections. I can't send them to the Illinois Department of Mental Health because he's not criminally insane.
Yeah. Or the hospital's fault in this case.
Yeah.
There was not a bed for him.
Oh, you mean trying to find some other thing?
Right. Yeah.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of finances too, the state.
Yeah.
At one time, there were more people in the Illinois Department of Mental Health than there are presently, but because we got better drugs, straight.
Yeah.
They're over here in Kenmore.
Kenmore.
I shouldn't say that. That's a dump for these people. it's a practical center. It's going to disappear too, because Kenmore and Winthrop Avenue are in close proximity to the lake, Regis Park.
Right.
And Edgewater are...
up and coming.
Up and coming neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Lakeview has already arrived, and at the south end of Kenmore and Winthrop are gone.
Yeah.
And Uptown itself is being rehabbed. Where these people going to go? I don't know. It's, but the places for them to dump these humans is becoming more and more limited. I don't know. So those are problems that the social workers have got to figure out. I know that you guys are...
No. Well, yeah, I just wanted to move on, take time to move on to the question of your discretion in sentencing.
It's much better on the state side than it is on the federal side.
Is it?
Oh, it's a horrible situation exists presently, as I see it, on the federal side in sentencing. The sentencing alternatives available to the judge in federal courts are very, very limited. And I hope that some relief is coming down the line, maybe by Supreme Court decisions, will require that the sentencing guidelines be altered considerably. And there are some cases that are going to cause the federal system to look at the sentencing guidelines much more closely, and maybe certain adjustments will be made, all for the better. Presently, the state system is much, much better than the federal system. There are constraints put on judges with respect to sentencing. There are certain matters in which sentencing is mandatory for certain crimes, and drug crimes particularly. The institutions that we have here are loaded with individuals and drug crimes and sentencing. I believe we're sentencing a lot of users, not really getting at the big-time pushers, narcotics.
Yeah.
And pushers and narcotics that we are getting are small-time people. Individuals got a bad habit. He's out possibly pushing drugs and using them at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
At the bottom end of the scale, we get an awful lot of people at the bottom end of the scale that are getting mandatory time because of the drugs that are involved.
Yeah.
And this is called the war on drugs. The war on drugs has become a big deal. The Illinois Department of Corrections and then Cook County Jail. Cook County Jail is the largest jail, largest prison in the United States. If you're aware of it,
is it?
It's got many divisions.
Okay.
It is the largest because New York and Los Angeles are cut up in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Cook County is Cook County is very big.
Yeah.
And it's got population. If you go to New York, you got these boroughs, they're separate counties.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So statistically, it brings it down a lot. But we got the biggest jail all right over here.
Right.
And this jail used to house a hell of a lot less people 30, 40, 50 years ago. And we are housing an awful lot of people that are in on and maybe other crimes that resulted from their use of drugs, maybe a lot of burglaries, low-class burglaries, breaking in a filling station, stealing a box of cigarettes, a number of cartons of cigarettes, and housed under Cook County Jail as burglars. And the real problem is narcotics and their habit. But we don't have enough money to treat their narcotic addiction, and we just decided, house these individuals, and we do, because we're tough on crime.
Mm-hmm.
But being tough on crime, I have no problem whatsoever incarcerating people that come up and blow a hole in you and take your life as well as your money.
Yeah.
And I would just as soon see that individual out of circulation for the rest of his life if he is going to have the propensity to come back and cause more trouble.
Right.
So, you take a look at an individual's background and you say, well, it's just unfortunate. We got to take this guy out of circulation because he's a threat to the safety of other people. That's all. You're just going to incapacitate him.
Right.
This is a prophylactic thing. That's all. Mm-hmm. We gotta do it for society.
Right.
So we gotta house this individual. I don't think we have to house an awful lot of these other individuals. I think that was the law and order thing that a lot of people get onto and decide that they're going to run for office on that basis. That to me is absolute nonsense. And we get the individuals that get elected to office on the term vanities. They need more money because they're going to build a bigger jail.
Yeah.
I not only need more money, but I need more people inside of the sheriff's department of corrections because I need more people to control these people in the county jail. And then I need more sheriffs out in the street to enforce on to reduce the amount of drugs. The Chicago Police Department says we need more narcotics officers. And I, you know, just was
animated. Yeah, yes.
This thing is absolutely ludicrous.
It's unfortunate to me that it seems like even when times when you're using what sounds to be absolutely sound discretion in sentencing, we talked earlier about this 18-year-old woman in 1990, Negrete, who scalds her 17-month-old baby and burns it horribly over 60% of the body, and what sounds like sound discretion, this is somebody who needs to be taken out of the population, and you sentence this woman to 45 years.
I think
and
then 35.
But then it's overruled because the maximum penalty for such a crime is 30 years, and then it sounds to me like sometimes what's very sound discretion is kind of...
I believe they found that I could give her an extended term because the crime was particularly heinous. However, I believe that one of the things I said at the time of sentencing caused the appellate court to hang its head on the language that I had used at the time.
So right.
That I had abused the discretion that I had. This was with respect to... On the other hand,
right.
sentencing an individual for a longer period of time.
Right.
What I really wanted to do was to preclude this woman from having an opportunity to have more, bring more children into the world for the, and to assault them in the way that she had assaulted mm-hmm. this child. That's a terrible, horrible
sure.
thing. So she wanted to run around and enjoy life and have a good time, and this child was disrupting social life. That to me was absolutely terrible. And I also well knew that under the then sentencing act that has since been amended. You know, now you have to do a violent crime something like 85% of the amount of time that it's sentenced to. At that time it was only 50% of the time. So I knew that she would be out in no longer than 17.5 years. And actually everybody gets 90 days meritorious time. So she, under the 35 years that I had sentenced her to, would be available and out on the street again in 17 years, 3 months. I don't remember if she was then incarcerated or at liberty at the time that I had sentenced her, but I believe she might have been incarcerated, I'm not sure. And of course, any time that she had been done, was time that would be reduced from the amount of time that she would have to do. So
right.
I was just figuring how long it would take her, she was still fertile, to not be in a position to abuse any more kids.
Right.
You know, that was simply my idea. Now, of course, this method and I don't look at it, and believe me, I don't believe in birth control at all. And any form. And pro-life is you'll find. But I, maybe somebody construed it as some kind of birth control by this judge. I don't know what went through the minds of these individuals. I felt it was appropriate to keep her in a situation in which she would be celibate and forced, so to speak, for a period of time. So if she didn't have her children to That's the reason
right.
I sensed her at that time. And that was that was my thought in the matter. Now maybe it wasn't appropriate for some reason or other. Somebody else saw it, but that was my reasoning at that time. sentencing a particular individual.
That creative sentencing is, it's unfortunately, it sounds appropriate and it's with sound judgment, and unfortunately it's, sometimes it's overturned. You sentence a guy who had committed all these crimes and then found that he had family in California. Yeah. So the deal made was you can't live in the state of Illinois anymore.
Well,
so he could not commit those crimes here, and hopefully he would have some family there to help him get his life together. And then in an appeals court, that gets overturned. It seems like sometimes the state really holds your discretion.
There's some discretion, such as limiting the geographical area in which a individual can move around on probation. I sentenced a number of individuals on minor crimes, such as shoplifting and...
Well, this guy that I'm referring to, Charles Harrison, 92, was a purse snatcher. Fairly minor crime in comparison to some of these other things.
Well, I had an individual that... a number of individuals, I recall, over the years, in which I would say, all right. As a condition of your probation, I'm going to place you on probation for a period of 2 years. And during that period of probation, you're going to be allowed to obviously work and so on and so forth, and to travel wherever you have to travel to and from. Okay? But outside of the hours in which you're regularly working, I'm going to confine you to a geographic area. Now, you're living presently in a good reading room.
Okay.
That's a large housing project that we all know where it's located. It says, now, I'm going to restrict your movement because all of your criminal activity has been east of Clark Street and north of the Chicago River and south of Oak Street. That is actually a magnificent mile.
Right.
And... you've been boosting and stealing and taking things and of which you've been convicted and charged with.
Yeah.
Of going into these stores and taking merchandise and large quantities of merchandise. So take that little temptation away from you. So you're not going to, we're not going to allow you to go east of Clark Street. All right. And just confine your activities to north of Chicago, the north branch of Chicago River, and south of North Ann.
Okay.
That's a fair amount. Nice bit of territory. You get a good feeling in the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
Except to and from work.
Yeah.
For the next 2 years. Well, I don't see any problem. Because there's such a thing as known as house arrest. They could put you under house arrest and not let you out at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I went with this geographical thing. Now, I had an individual that was pretty much a public nuisance. Okay. Some of these cases aren't real big, there's all kinds of criminal activity. And there's kind of minor felonies, So I had an individual that was represented by an attorney, and he was present in court, and I said, okay, this kid was found guilty. I don't know if he had a bench trial or a jury trial, or I believe it was probably a bench trial or a plea of guilty, whatever. And these things are pretty much negotiated. So I sat down with the parties, I sat down with the state's attorney, I sat down defense lawyer. And it had come in up for sentencing, so it must have been either sometime after the individual was found guilty at a bench trial, after a negotiated plea, they had to get a pre-sentence investigation. So I sat down and I said, look, this kid has got some good qualities here and ought to get his life together. So I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to put him on probation. But, and his mother was right there. And she said, his brother, John, so-and-so is such a nice individual. He's out in California. I forget where in California.
Yeah.
And he's got a business going. And he gets on well with his brother. And I would like him to go back.
Okay.
So I know that I can't sense, I can't exile somebody. I know that doesn't exist. But I get on a bench and I put him on probation. And as a condition of probation, I tell him, we've had enough of you in this neighborhood, in this jurisdiction, and I just haven't worked out for him. And I'm telling you, and I talked to his folks, and I talked to his, and his mother said, these kids are just a bad influence, this group that he's hanging around with.
Okay.
So, my solution is thing is I tell them, well, I'm going to exile you to California.
Okay.
You step foot back in here in Illinois.
Yeah.
And you're in violation of your probation.
Okay.
Now, I don't have power to do that.
Right.
Yeah, exile is banishment.
Banishment
is a thing that's classically been in the law for many years, but we don't use it.
Okay.
But in early times, banishment was a terrible penalty to impose.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you were banished from your village or your community, that's where all your ties were, you know.
Yeah.
And it was a terrible thing to do to an individual, maybe in ancient times, and not so ancient either, you know, into medieval times and beyond.
Yeah.
You know, they were banished.
Sure.
When you did that, you were really hurting somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So I exiled this youngster in California, but all with the basic consent of the state prosecutors I've known for years. These guys are really right. They're good. And that was my intent.
Okay.
So my intent was just to put him on probation.
Put him on probation.
You know, his mother felt that he was hanging around with these kids, so I thought I'd help her out. So I said, so I didn't make that statement in a record. So the kid gets in trouble later, see.
Mm-hmm.
And now, because he gets in trouble with another conviction, and he's got this one, he's got to go to prison.
What?
So now he's got to go to prison.
Oh, okay.
But now a lawyer turns around and says, well, you know, that banishment thing that Judge Close did, that was in a proper sentence. So they go to the appellate court.
Right.
Go to the appellate court. Now all you got is the bare naked record.
Right.
And now he's got me saying that I banished this kid to California. I know he can't exile a kid to California. You know, but judge up there using this common sense, and some of these guys don't always use common sense.
Okay.
And I'm not telling tales out of school, speaking to my colleagues in a particular direction, but, I just didn't come in with the yesterday's running. Around here. And I well know that what I can, what I can't do, I was really attempting to help this youngster out, get him away from a bad home.
Yeah. And it was an agreed upon situation.
Yeah, basically, yeah, right. The only real thing in the thing is that the sentence of probation was proper. That particular restriction on his movement was probably, as you would say, inappropriate because the law didn't provide for it. I well know that. They were able to knock out the underlying conviction, and then he was not eligible for a mandatory sentence to the penitentiary in a subsequent case. And that's the reason. That was the underlying reason in that case. I can't even remember the kid's name. So you know, those things happen.
Yeah.
And that's it. I'll watch it.
All right, sir.
Okay.